Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vinken and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our good friend Steve Lehman from News Channel 5. Steve, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
Robbie, good to hear from you. Adam, good to talk to you. Guys, how are we this morning?
We're great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Steve, got a lot to get to with the Preds and the Titans. We'll start on the Preds front. What did you make of the Forsberg contract? 8 years, $8.5 million per year. The negotiation took a little while, but it finally got done between David Poile and the Forsberg camp. What did you make of that deal for the Predators?
Well, all it had to get done was get done at some point, right? And
that's
they
right.
Got it done. So I don't think it really matters that it took a little bit longer than maybe somebody expected, or it went right down to the wire. Because at the end of the day, Philip Forsberg is going to play here until his mid-30s and probably beyond, frankly, if we're being honest about it. And that's good, because Philip Forsberg wants to be here. So from his camp, he ends up getting $8.5 million per season. He sticks around in Nashville, where both he and his wife love. They get to build their family here. He gets to play hockey in the only city really he's known in North America as a hockey player. And for the Predators, they keep the all-time leading goal scorer in franchise history, who's still in his late 20s, probably has the peak of his career in front of him, and they didn't overpay in a big way for it. You know, you can quibble over a dollar or a cent here or there, but the contract to me seems very fair, ultimately. The one thing maybe from the Predators' perspective that you don't love is you give the complete no-movement clause in there, but let's be honest, things are going really poorly if you're moving Philip Forsberg at some point after this deal anyway. And so from a Predator standpoint, you get a really exciting, dynamic player that your fan base loves, and you get him back under a contract that I think is fairly team-friendly, ultimately, in terms of the way they want to construct this team moving forward.
So, Steve, with that in mind, you got Forsberg back in the fold. We'll see what else happens this week. They've got some cap space, and I think they're definitely going to add to their top six in some form or fashion coming up here in the next couple of days. Ryan McDonough has come in from Tampa Bay. So given all that information, how do you currently view this team based on the moves that they've made and based off where we last saw them against Colorado, who just mowed through them in the first round of the playoffs, albeit they mowed through pretty much everybody in the playoffs?
Well, Adam might interject that this is dangerous, but I actually concur with the narration of David Poile from yesterday on this, that I think the addition of McDonough, the re-signing of Forsberg, and just the natural evolution of some of the young players on this team who stepped in and played big roles last year and now will be a year older and a year stronger and a year more familiar with the system, means that the Predators are better right now today than they were at the end of the season when they lost to the Avalanche. Oh, by the way, they'd have UC Saros back between the pipes and healthy, which certainly helps as well. Now, the question is, and I asked this yesterday to David Poile, is how much closer are they to the Avalanche? Because we all watched that series, and they were a long ways away from truly contending with the team that ultimately won the Stanley Cup. Now, that's not a huge crime, because the Avalanche pretty much rolled through the playoffs against everybody. So everybody in the league is chasing the Avalanche and trying to get up to that level. But certainly the Predators are looking at that team, not just in the Western Conference, not just for the Stanley Cup, but within their division. That's the team that they have to compete with. That's the team that they have to look up to. And I think they're a ways off from that. I do agree with you that with the money, I think the one thing they may be able to do is try to find a second line type of forward that maybe bolsters that top six. But I think this is a process that sort of starts them moving back in the direction. And I thought it was interesting, and it may have been a choice of words, perhaps, but David Poile did say yesterday that he felt the way the team was going is they took a couple steps back in the last couple of years to hopefully now be able to take a step forward.
Yep.
And I may be reading too much into that, but it does sort of feel like this was the plan. Get Forsberg back in. You may not be able to make this team a Stanley Cup contender tomorrow or during this week in free agency, but you start moving with this core forward to hopefully get back there over the next couple of years.
Steve Lehman from News Channel 5 joining us here on Robbie and Rex Road. Robbie and Rex Road. Jeez, easy for me to say. I don't know how you don't always get tongue-tied on that, Robbie, or Joe, who's not here to speak for himself. But switching gears, Steve, to the Tennessee Titans, the ESPN has been doing its recent lists ranking the top 10 players by position. Today, of course, the running back list came out. Number one on the list, surprise, surprise, Derrick Henry. Number two, Jonathan Taylor. In your mind, would you still have Derrick Henry above Jonathan Taylor in your rankings of the top running backs in the NFL?
I would, and I'm pleasantly surprised that they still do. It seems like somehow with Derrick Henry out through the last half of last season, and this is not to take anything away from what Jonathan Taylor did because he was sensational, but it's like people completely forgot who the most dominant player offensively in the NFL was over the last 2.5 seasons before that. Yes, he was hurt. Yes, that's an issue. He's got to come back, and he's got to prove to us that he's 100%. But since everybody believes that's going to be the case, and he looked good when he was at minicamp a few weeks ago, I see no reason to think that Derrick Henry won't be the same productive, dominant running back that he's been this year. And I think the Titans are going to ride him in that way. And when you look back when he was healthy over those 2.5 years, maybe even 3 years, if you go back to the last part of the 2019 season, Derrick Henry was not just the best running back in the game today. You could make an argument he was in the middle of the best stretch by a running back in the history of the NFL. That's how good he was in terms of the carries he was eating up, the yards he was producing, the touchdowns he was producing, and what he meant to the Titans offense. Again, nothing to take away from Jonathan Taylor because he's sensational. But he's sensational in the context of a player right now. Derrick Henry is historically great when he's at the top of his game, and I expect that's what we see again this fall.
The Titans will start training camp here in a few weeks, and I know that a predominant storyline since he was drafted by the Tennessee Titans is the status of Treylon Burks, his health, and whether he will be ready for prime time, so to speak, when the Titans open the season against the New York Giants. How concerned, if at all, are you by what you have seen and heard about Treylon Burks so far, and how closely will you be watching him come training camp?
I don't know how, if you're a Titans fan, you're not at least a little bit concerned, Adam, because this is the guy that they traded up for in the first round to get to replace A.J. Brown. And A.J. Brown was your best pass catcher over the last couple of seasons, and you need somebody to help replace that production to make sure you have any semblance of a passing game this year. And it's not all on Treylon Burks. Some of that's Robert Woods. Some of that is other guys on this team having to step up. I think it's unfair to put the expectation that he's going to be A.J. Brown right away. But that is the reality. He may not have chose it. The Titans maybe don't want that necessarily to be the case, but people are going to always compare him to that. And he's got to be a part of the solution, if not the entire solution. And right now, he can't even stay on the field for practice. Now, I expect them to have figured this thing out by the time he gets back at training camp, and I expect him to be out there much more than we saw him in the offseason. But the bottom line is, he's behind. It takes every rookie some time to come in and learn what's going on, and he's going to have to do that on a moving bus when training camp starts and try to catch up. And that is very concerning for me. And we talked about it the other night on the Electric Power Company Sunday Sports Central on News Channel 5. I asked Jonathan Hutton, I said, who are the three people that have the most pressure on them this season from a Titans perspective? And he said, obviously, Ryan Tannehill when it comes to postseason success. He listed Taylor Lewan, given the anchor of the offensive line and what his contract status is. And then he went right to Treylon Burks. And I agree, he may be a rookie. He maybe hasn't played before, but he absolutely has to be a part of this offense in a big way this fall. Otherwise, at least for year one, that pick and that move around the trade and getting Treylon Burks is going to be a huge bust in a lot of people's eyes.
So, Steve, with that in mind, last thing for you here. As you look at the team in general heading into training camp, if you go by the sports books, a lot of people expecting at least some step back for the Titans this year. Obviously, not having A.J. Brown a big part of that. I love the defense on paper heading into training camp. How do you feel about this group? Are they the division favorites in your mind? Are they a playoff team? What do you think about the Tennessee Titans as we head into training camp here in the next couple of weeks?
As we sit here today, Robbie, I still think they're the favorites to win the division, but I think the gap is closer between them and the Colts than it was last year. And I also think the Jaguars aren't the worst team in football again. I'm not really sure what to make of the Texans at this point, but I think the division will be more competitive than it was last year when really the Titans didn't even need their fastball to run away with it. that's going to have to be a different story this year. I still think they're the favorite. I agree with you. I think the defense is great, and what a difference a year makes, because this time last year we were like, how in the world is this team going to perform with the defense? Will they get anything out of them, or will it be all on the offense to try to figure it out? Well, they figured it out last year with the offense underperforming and struggling through injuries and the defense rising to the occasion. If you're a Titans fan or if you're Mike Vrabel, you're sitting here today saying, I feel comfortable with the defense and think they're going to be really good. Can we get that offense back to a level that approaches what we saw in 2020? If they do that, if they get that offensive production back, they're a Super Bowl contending type of team. If they don't, I think it's a dogfight within the division. But yeah, right now, sitting here today, I still give them the slight edge on the Colts at the top of the AFC South.
The great Steve Lehman, our guest here on Robbie and Rexrow, does a great job at News Channel 5. Steve, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to join us this morning.
Robbie, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. And real quick, Adam, great to talk to you. You are an absolute pleasure to work with around the Predators, and a treat for everybody who's a Predators fan. You've got a great eye for stories and what you do. So I look forward to the next chapter, and I know a lot of people do as well.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks, Steve.
Very, very good stuff. Very well said. Steve, thanks, man. Appreciate you.
You bet. See you guys.
Steve Lehman, our guest here on Robbie and Rexrow. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans and the Preds. Take it anywhere you want to take it. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rexrow here on 1025-1063, The Game. Tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight at 7.05 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds host the Memphis Redbirds, the AAA affiliate of the St. Louis Cardinals at First Horizon Park. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrow. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Steve Lehman from News Channel 5 for joining us in the last segment. It is going to be interesting to see how this plays out. You brought up the Jeremy Fowler piece from ESPN.com. So Jeremy Fowler basically goes through each position group and gets input from executives and coaches, and I don't think players are a part of it, but just different people around the league. Coordinators are involved as well, and kind of gets their thought on the top 10 players at each position group. So we talked about this last week. Jeffrey Simmons was at number 2 behind Aaron Donald in terms of the defensive tackles. I was very interested to see the running back list when it came out, because I wanted to see where Derrick Henry would be, and frankly, I thought he would be probably second or third just based off the injury that he had last year. But he is at number 1 on ESPN.com. Derrick Henry at 1. Jonathan Taylor at 2. So, Adam, how do you view the Derrick Henry situation from the standpoint of he's 28, which is by no means old, but that's getting up there in terms of running back years. He's got some wear and tear on him from a lot of the carries that he's had over the last few years. I guess if there is a blessing in disguise from him getting hurt last year, the workload that he was on pace for was the most carries in the history of the National Football League, and he did not get to that with the injury that he sustained. So how do you view him coming off the foot injury? Do you expect to see the same Derrick Henry that we saw pre-injury? Because that's always a difficult question to answer, especially at that position.
Yeah, it's a good question. And according to Jeremy Fowler in his story, he said that Henry and Jonathan Taylor tied for the most first-place votes in his poll, but Henry won out on composite scoring.
Yep.
He had an NFL coordinator say, quote, I'd still give him one more year at the top, this being Derrick Henry. He's the constant for that offense, no matter who's around him. I still trust him to make it happen above anyone else. You can give him the ball 30 times, and he won't disappoint. And yeah, you're right. Like, if there is a blessing in disguise for the Derrick Henry injury, it's that there was a few months there where he wasn't playing, and perhaps that gives him a little bit more runway as he returns. But as this coordinator said, and I think I was talking about this with Caroline a couple of weeks ago, that without, you know, this offense, you know, is cycles. I mean, not cycles. It runs through Derrick Henry.
For sure.
No pun intended.
And that was when you had A.J. Brown. Now you don't even have him.
No, absolutely. an NFC executive is quoted as saying, "I go Henry because everyone knows he is running the ball and their offensive line has been injured and it largely doesn't matter."
That's a good point.
I mean, that's Derrick Henry is a freak in the most positive way that one can call someone a freak, because his athletic ability is supernatural. And I am curious to see how the Titans go about using him this year, because I don't think you're right, especially with what Steve was talking about with the uncertainty surrounding Treylon Burks. You can't ease Derrick Henry back in. Like, you've got to go back to, as Derrick says, let the big dog eat. You have to go back to doing that. You can't, you know, I think it would have been better if, why am I blanking on his name? The running back who was with the Titans, who signed with the Panthers.
Foreman.
Deontay Foreman, thank you. If Deontay Foreman was still on the team, I thought Deontay Foreman did a good job replacing Derrick Henry. I feel like if you had Deontay Foreman still, maybe you could rotate Foreman in a little bit more. But without, I mean, and Hassan Haskins is an intriguing rookie, but we'll see how much the Titans use him. But, you know, it'd be one thing if the Titans had other options and you could maybe take a little bit off of Derek's plate, but they don't have that. So, I mean, Robert Woods is an upgrade, you would think, over Julio Jones, because you would hope that Robert Woods would actually be on the field. And Austin Hooper is an upgrade over Anthony Firkser. But there's a question mark at wide receiver replacing A.J. Brown with Treylon Burks. So you're going to have to go back to using Derrick Henry the way you were using Derrick Henry. And that's it could thing. Be a good thing or a bad thing.
That's the thing. Like, I always say this, and maybe it does change now that he's actually been injured. Now, I will say, you know, I'm no medical expert, obviously, thank God, but I don't know that the injury to his foot came from wear and tear. By most medical experts, it just happened, and sometimes that can just happen. So, you know, could this be the sign of things to come with Derrick Henry, and could injuries start to break him down? Maybe. But I've always said this about Derrick Henry. You can have a plan to limit him, and you can have a plan that, okay, you know, we don't want Derrick Henry having 35 carries a day, so let's ease him into the game. And that sounds good in theory. And then you get into the second quarter, and you're down 7-3, and you hand him the ball three times in a row, and all of a sudden he's ripped off 25 yards. And then you hand him the ball again, and he rips off 8 yards. Like, It's an easy thing to say that you want to limit Derrick Henry's carries. It's much harder, I think, to play that out in the course of a game when you know, number one, how important he is and how good he is, but number two, how much of an effect he has on the opposing defense. Like, you can, and I don't know that I've ever seen another player exactly like this at that position. Just, you can see it watching the game on television, the opposing defense wearing down by the time the fourth quarter comes around. Like, they have no desire to continue tackling this gigantic human carrying the ball by the time the fourth quarter rolls around. So I think it's an easy thing to say that you want to limit the carries of Derrick Henry, and maybe this is the year that they do it. I think that's a much harder thing to put in practice once he's on the field and, you know, the game is live, as they say.
Yeah, and just to go through this list, the list of the top 10 running backs according to Jeremy Fowler, Derrick Henry, Jonathan Taylor, Nick Chubb,
yep,
Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, Joe Mixon, Christian McCaffrey, Najee Harris, Aaron Jones, and Javonte Williams. Honorable mentions: Austin Eckler, Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley. Also receiving votes: Josh Jacobs, Miles Sanders, and Antonio Gibson. Any qualms with that list?
I mean, not really, but I guess what really stands out to me is I think there's a pretty significant gap after you get to number five. Like, Kamara's really good, even though last year probably not the year that he wanted to have. But, you know, Henry, Taylor, and Chubb, they're different players, but they play a similar style. But after you get to five, I think there's a pretty significant drop-off. Like, I love me some Aaron Jones, but the fact that Aaron Jones is at number nine on this list with Green Bay probably tells you about the state of the running back position. Like, Aaron Jones is really good, but I don't know if he should be a top 10 running back in the league.
He was number eight in last year's ranking. He was six. It was the highest ranking I think he must have received
He's really good in the passing game. Yeah. And that's really what goes, like, even the Joe Mixon part of this. Like, that's how you have to evaluate running backs today, because, like, the days of Derrick Henry, that's what makes him such a unicorn, because they're largely gone. Like, the running back that you just turn around and hand the ball off to 25, 30 times a game, that just doesn't really happen in today's NFL. So, you know, Jonathan Taylor has some of that. Nick Chubb has some of that when he's on, too. But those three guys are really about it when it comes to just traditionally turning around and handing the ball off. So it's going to be interesting to see what version of Derrick Henry we see once training camp begins here in just a few weeks. By the way, programming announcement, David Poyle now at 10 o'clock coming up on the DDC. So right at the top of the show, the guys will be joined by David Poyle, general manager of the Nashville Predators. So make sure you're tuned in for that. Speaking of the Predators, we caught up with Philip Forsberg earlier in the show, live from Sweden. It was a great interview with Forsberg. If you missed it, we'll have that for you coming up next. Let me tell you about my friends at FanDuel Sportsbook. You can go yard all summer long with $5 Dinger Tuesdays on FanDuel Sportsbook. This season, all customers will get $5 for every home run hit by both teams when you place a $25 to hit a home run wager on Tuesday MLB games. And the best part about Dinger Tuesdays is even if your bet loses, FanDuel will pay you $5 for every home run. Austin Riley hit a rocket last night for the Braves against Scherzer and the Mets, but I'd probably go with the Yankees. They've been my team all year long with this competition. Aaron Judge crushing the ball, Anthony Rizzo crushing the ball. That's the team I'd go with, but take it any way you want to take it. What are you waiting on? Just pick your home run hitter and turn big swings into big wins. There's no better place to bet America's pastime than on America's number one sportsbook. So head on over to your FanDuel account or download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up using promo code Rob. Once again, that promo code is Rob. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. A max bonus of $25. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5-106.3 The Game. We caught up with Predators forward Philip Forsberg, fresh off signing an 8-year, $68 million contract to re-sign here in Nashville. Here was that conversation from earlier today with Philip Forsberg. And welcome in the man of the hour, Philip Forsberg. Philip, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So, Philip, what's kind of this last week or so been like for you, signing the deal and the press conference yesterday and now trying to move ahead with the rest of your offseason here? What was it like to finally get this thing done?
It's been great. It's been a lot. It's been a lot going on, obviously, but it's been I'm very happy that we ended up getting this done. And yeah, obviously we're very excited to move ahead here.
What was the process like for you? Because, you know, you've been talking about this. I mean, I asked you about this last year at training camp, and it's been something that you've had to deal with in the media for a long time. But so just this whole process of you're playing last year, you're on an expiring contract, the negotiations to get to this point, what did you learn about all that? And, you know, how does it feel to finally be done with all that at this point?
It feels great. I remember telling you guys that I was considering sitting out the season, but I think it was good that I didn't pull that trigger. It worked out in my favor by playing.
I'd say so.
But it was a fun season, obviously, for the team. I thought the team took big steps from a little bit uncertain off season, and we moved along very nicely, I think. And personally, I think I obviously took another step in my development too, and that's, no better time, I guess, to do it at that time too. But it's definitely going to be, good to just keep playing and keep trying to improve without having that kind of talk like you mentioned in the background.
Philip, as you were kind of going through this process, what were some things that were important to you to make sure that this ultimately got done? And you know, how important was just your experience with the Predators, of course, the franchise itself, but also the city of Nashville, knowing that this is a place that you and your fiance have come to love? How important was that throughout the course of these discussions?
I mean, as a player, I guess you can say that there's three major things, and obviously it's the team and it's the city and it's the fans. At least that's the way I look at it. And there's obviously certain things that come into play on top of that, but those are the main three. And you can check the box in all three of those, obviously, Nashville. And like you said, we love Nashville. We think it's it's a great city. We met there obviously a handful of years ago now, and we've obviously kind of turned into our home, which is cool, and that's not going to change for the next eight, hopefully, which is a great feeling to have. And at the end of the day, that was the plan all along, and now we want to get to work and try to bring a championship to the city.
Philip Forsberg joining us here on Robbie and Rex Road. Philip, Adam Vingan here. Good to talk to you. As you just said, you know, you get a contract with a full no movement clause through the first 6 years. And you said it yesterday as well, that it was important for you and your fiance to be able to have that security, to know that you're going to be here so that you can plant roots and take the next steps in your relationship and start a family. I'm also curious about how much the trades of Victor Arvidsson and Ryan Ellis played into that decision, because they, like you, were core players for this team who signed long-term contracts expecting to be members of this team for that long, whether it was 7 years for Victor, 8 years for Ryan, and ultimately that didn't happen and they were traded to different teams. If at all, did that play a role in wanting to make sure that you absolutely had that security in your contract to know that that would not happen to you?
I mean, we never brought those two guys' names up, but at the end of the day, you see players get traded all the time to to different teams, and like I said, it's definitely something that was important to us early on in negotiating to getting that taken care of. And like you said, we've seen it firsthand without really bringing those situations up. It was pretty clear early on that we did want that to be the case, and we're very happy that we were able to get that to work.
Philip Forsberg on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road.
Philip, what was on the itinerary for your bachelor party?
I bet you want to know that.
Yes, I do.
There was, it was a good time. We had a good time. It was, my friends did a great job setting it all up. We're not all up. We all put it together, together, obviously. But it was great. We had a really good time. And there's a little bit of recovery needed, but I feel better now. So.
Where were you when you signed the contract? I believe, you know, a member of your agency tweeted out a picture when the deal was official of you signing it on a sidewalk cafe, perhaps. Where were you when you actually put ink to paper?
So that was in Stockholm on Sunday morning after we had got back. So, and he got back even later, because he came from Montreal for the draft. So he was 2 hours, I think, away from the airport. At least we got the night before, and I stayed over at a friend's place, and then we got that done and fitted in a little wedding suit trial before, too. So there's been a lot going on, I'll tell you that.
Yep, that's a big couple of weeks for you. So, Philip, obviously with the contract behind you now, you brought up your season from a year ago. Obviously big numbers, over 40 goals, 84 points last season. What do you make of the step that you were able to take last year on the ice, and how do you try to replicate that and even improve on that as you move forward now?
I think that's been something that I've had in me for a while, to be honest with you, and why I haven't been able to do it. I don't know. I would have obviously changed something at that point, but I think it is a bit of a maturing process. I mean, you come into this league and you're excited to play and you figure things out as you go, and then... Yeah, it gets, like I said, it never gets easier, whether you think it should or not. I mean, it gets harder. There's new players coming in. Everything changes. Your role changes on the team, and the team changes, obviously. So I think for me, it's been a constant growing process of just trying to become better as a player overall. I guess, obviously, scoring and producing offensively is always and will always be my number one strength, I guess. But at the same time, I feel like I've grown into being a way more complete player, playing a lot of minutes on the other side of the puck now too, especially in the playoffs. We're matched up against obviously the big boys for the Avs there, with playing almost every shift against Makar, and like, that's challenging, but it's something that I've taken more pride in, and I think that's definitely helped my game overall too. You know, you get more trust from your coaches and your teammates, and then ultimately you're on the ice more, and I think that's something that kind of gets lost a little bit in the fact of all the stats, obviously, and that's something that I do want to keep improving on going forward as well.
Philip, you mentioned the Avalanche, of course, ultimately winning the Stanley Cup, and you and your teammates got a firsthand look at how dominant they could be in the first round. I don't know if you continued to watch the Stanley Cup playoffs once your season was over, but you know, seeing how the Avalanche, you know, made it through and ultimately won the championship, I guess, you know, what impressed you the most about that team? You know, and this is a team that you've seen grow too. A team that when they faced the Predators and in the Stanley Cup playoffs in 2018, they looked like they were ready to take that next step, and ultimately they did. So, you know, what did you see from the Avalanche? What most impressed you about their run, if you watched it?
I honestly didn't watch any playoff hockey at all after we were done. It's just one of those things that you know somebody's going to win, and I'll just let them do it. I don't really want to watch anything. And I mean, but just from playing the Avs in our series, it was obviously they're a better team, and clearly they were the best team in the league this year. But I think what impressed me the most is kind of like, obviously their top players are top in the world. I mean, like I mentioned, McCarr and McKinnon, and even a player like Rantanen turning into almost their best forward in the playoffs. I mean, he had a really good run. And then I think, but what impressed me the most, I think, is their overall, just the depth of the team. I mean, they rolled four lines. I mean, from what I've gathered, basically through the whole playoffs, you know, every player stepped up at different moments, and that's kind of how it has to be. I mean, it reminded me a little bit of when we went to the finals there. We had the same kind of feeling in our team. Every player contributed, whether it was the first line or the fourth line or even the Black Aces coming in playing big roles. And I think they obviously had a way more skilled and better team than we did that year, but it was kind of the same like mentality that it wasn't just McKinnon every game or McCarr every game. It was Lehkonen or it was O'Connor kid. It was like they had a good depth, and clearly that's what made them so successful.
Philip Forsberg on with us here on Robbie and Rexha. So, Philip, to that point, in terms of building the depth, you brought up the Ryan McDonagh trade a couple of different times yesterday. What does a move like that signal to players on your team, bringing in a guy that's a two-time Cup champion and has been as consistently really good of a shutdown defenseman as McDonagh has been? What does that do for you guys?
No, I mean, it does a lot. I mean, like I said, especially going into last season, you weren't really sure what direction this franchise is going to take with, like I said, some of the moves we made. And then credit to all the guys on the team, we steered the ship back in the right direction. You know, that could have gone either way, and we made an uncertain situation into a good season. I mean, we made the playoffs and had exceptional performances from many individual players, and kind of put, like I said, the team back on track. And now this move, trading for an older, but like you said, very still elite defenseman, in my opinion. You know, that's something that you want as a player in the middle, trying to get to the middle of your prime. You know, you want to see that commitment from the team. It's different if we have him and we trade him away for a pick or something. Then, like I said, we're trending the wrong direction. But in my opinion, that shows that we're here to compete again. And that's what me and obviously the other core players in our team, we all want to win. And that's what we have to do.
So, Philip, last thing here for you, as you look ahead to this season with training camp coming up here in a few weeks, what's going to be for the kind of that next step to be taken from you guys? What do you think that's going to require from your group heading into the season? Obviously, with the picture still not finished, we think, and maybe some more guys being added to your team later this week.
I think we have to keep doing the things that we did. I mean, started with since Heinze came in, we were obviously transitioned into a different type of team than we might have been with Laviolette. And I think that's something that we've gotten better and better at. Obviously, the half season there, we fought all the way till the end and somehow made the playoffs, even though we had a pretty bad start. And then last year was another step in the right direction, more building on that foundation of hard work and grit and physicality, but also adding more of an offensive identity to our team that I think was better last year. But I do think that's steps that we have to keep taking. Obviously, the core group of players, we have to get back or higher to the level we were last year, and all the young guys need to take another step as well. And we got a lot of exciting prospects and players that were getting their feet wet last year, but as you know, like, you need those players to take the next step. You need players on entry level or small deals to overperform with this salary cap era, you know, and that's, I definitely think we have the possibility for that.
Well, Philip, I can tell you the city is very excited that you've decided to re-sign here with the Predators. We appreciate so much you taking time to join us. Congratulations on the new contract. Congrats on the marriage coming up here in a couple of weeks, and we'll talk to you here in a few weeks, my friend.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Enjoy your summer.
Absolutely. Thanks, Philip Forsberg, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show. We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll react to Philip Forsberg coming up next as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Row, 1025, 1063 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning. By the way, Joe Rexroad will be back coming up next week on Monday. So the vacation is over, and he has to endure me again for 4 hours.
He misses it.
I just want to say one thing that's completely unrelated. So as we were coming back from break, they had that. And we had that. What's the technical radio term for that we just had?
The promo?
The promo. Yeah. Thank you. The promo. I don't know why I couldn't get that out. The promo for Darren Donick and Chase. And Chase is like, I still talk to people outside of this building. I'm glad that Chase has a social life outside of work.
Yes, he's.
I'm afraid he doesn't.
He's just swamped with his suitly duties. There's so much to do.
He goes home and stares into a dark corner for the other 20 hours of the day that he's not on the radio.
He is allowed to converse with people that don't work here. That's good.
Yes, I talk to people outside of the building. I hope so, Chase. I hope that you still have friends. Sorry.
Shout out to Chase McCabe.
Coming up next.
Thanks to Philip Forsberg for joining us earlier in the show. Kind enough to join us live from Sweden. So that was. Good on his part to be able to do that. You tried to get to the bottom of what exactly went on at his bachelor party, and he having none of it.
No dice. It's not. Perhaps it was not for family consumption.
Who knows?
Something was consumed, I'm sure. But whatever it was not for family consumption. And hey, Philip is everything is coming up roses for Philip Forsberg right now. Had the best season of his career. Signed a long-term contract, about to get married.
Came on Robbie and Rex Road this morning.
This morning. I think there's a lot to like if you're Philip Forsberg. So I'm sure whatever he did, he had a fabulous time. And now I'm sure he's drinking a lot of Pedialyte.
Recovering.
Yes, recovering, I think was the term.
Recovering.
He used. So, it's pretty clear from his comments yesterday and from joining us earlier in the show. He wanted to be here the whole time. They got that done. He talked about how much the city means to him and his fiance. I'm curious now, he's been here for a long time at this point. Philip Forsberg, he made his debut back in 2013 with the Predators. So you're going on 10 years now of Philip Forsberg being here in the city, and he just signed up for another 8-year deal. If he plays out this contract, to me, and you start talking about him in the same breath that you'll talk about Rene and Yossi one day is going to be in the same conversation. Like, I don't know whether or not, Philip Forsberg's jersey is going to be retired at some point, but I just wonder what having legacy players like this that are here for long stretches of time, like we saw with Pekka, that we're in the midst of seeing with Yossi and now with Philip Forsberg, presumably as well, what does that mean for a franchise? What does that mean for a fan base in terms of connecting with those type players? Because those are the type of players when you look around the league. Like, think about the Red Wings and the Avalanche and, the Blackhawks, guys, franchises that have been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. You think about those type of players that were in one place for a long period of time, which in today's world of sports is more of a rarity than it is the rule.
Yeah. I think that's important. As you said, it is rare for a professional athlete to spend the majority of his career, all of his career actually, in one spot. And you've seen it in all different types of sports where a player who is synonymous with one organization, attempts to play for another and it just doesn't look right. The image of Michael Jordan wearing a Washington Wizards jersey, it will never not look weird.
It's pretty weird.
Yeah, and that doesn't tarnish Michael Jordan's legacy. He is Michael Jordan. But it's a weird footnote at the end of an illustrious career.
I've just now gotten used to Brady in the Tampa Bay jersey.
Yeah, exactly. And if Tom Brady wouldn't have won a Super Bowl, it would have been a little bit different. But yeah, you're right. Like, you know, to have, you know, we saw firsthand just how much of an impact Pecorine had locally in terms of his outreach at the Vanderbilt Children's Hospital, and how many people fell in love with the sport of hockey because they watched, like, they liked watching Pecorine. And I think Philip Forsberg is a player in that same you know, mold for a lot of people locally. He is an all-time favorite. He is the greatest forward that's ever played for them, just based on his numbers. And you know, Philip Forsberg is someone who, you know, young hockey players in this area and areas, you know, adjacent, you know, who the young players look up to. They want to be like Philip Forsberg. How many number nines do you think there are playing, you know, hockey, yeah, you know, in the lower, you know, among in youth leagues in Nashville. So I think, you know, Philip is an important player, not just on the ice, but off the ice. And I think that's what David Boyle was talking about yesterday. And that's been important for Philip too, is to be a player that, you know, when his career is over, is synonymous with Nashville. And, you know, of course he'll want to win a couple championships before then, or at least one. But yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, we saw it with Pecorine, we did see it for a time with Shea Weber.
Yep.
And, you know, we're seeing it with Roman Josi and now with Philip Forsberg.
So as we wrap up here in the next couple of minutes, where have you seen his game grow the most? And do you feel like last year, the year that he had, is sustainable for him? We talked about the shooting percentage yesterday, but with the way he's played the game, he talked about, you know, how much growth he think he's seen in a 200-foot game of himself. Talked about he always has had, he feels like, the type of offensive season that he had last year in him at some point. He just finally put it together. Do you think that what he did last year, he can carry forward?
I think so, to some extent. I don't know if he's going to score 40 goals every year, but I think he has the talent to you know, challenge for that every year, even if he comes up a little bit short. I think I said yesterday that, you know, he needs to be a 35-goal, 70-point player every season. I think that's the baseline. You know, I've always been impressed with, you know, Phillip's physical ability. You know, I think when he leans into that, and not just uses, I think that was the one thing that John Hines said when he first got here about Philip. He wanted him to think power before skill, because we know that Philip can, you know, dance around defenders just because he's naturally gifted, but he also is a big guy. And when he puts that shoulder down, you know, he can get by guys, he can out-muscle guys, he can knock guys over along the boards. And I think that physical game accentuates the skill. So I think the more he can lean into that physicality, I think the better he'll get in becoming. Because you don't think of Philip Forsberg as a power forward necessarily.
Right.
Like when you think, like the first player I think of when I think power forward is like Tom Wilson in Washington. You know, and Tom certainly crosses the line a lot. But you know, but that physicality is the trademark of his game. You know, Philip has, you know, physicality is part of his game, but it's not necessarily the trademark. I would like to see Philip lean into that physicality a little bit more. I think that will make him an even better player.
And we'll see if he can do that. David Poyle coming up on the DDC next. This has been Robbie and Rex Road. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.